the blessings
of love and respect we offer to all, in times past and present, who have opened the doors of wisdom, reuniting all beings with their intrinsic purity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. The recitation of this rosary ever expands the awakening of faith in the three jewels, Bodhi, Dharma, and Sangha. Bodhi Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the perfect nature of truth for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Dharma Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the teachings for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. Sangham Saranam Gacchami, Dutiyampi Tatiyampi Savaha. I turn to the holy order for guidance. Again and yet again, may it be so. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Dukkha, the noble truth of suffering. Dukkha Samudaya, the noble truth of the origin of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha, the noble truth of the extinction of suffering. Dukkha Nirodha Gami Patipada, the noble truth of the path that leads to the extinction of suffering. So long as these four noble truths are not understood, we shall wander in sorrow and ignorance. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. All formations are transient, anicca. All formations are subject to suffering, dukkha. All things are without a self, anatta. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Namo Prajna Paramita Hridaya, homage to the wisdom in the heart. Form is not different from emptiness. Emptiness is not different from form. This is the teaching of our spiritual ancestors, Gautama Buddha, and all the great teachers who have transmitted the Dharma to this holy day. Blessed is the knowledge of emptiness. Homage to the devotees of this and all paths of self-purification. May all find simplicity, the joyous and practical guide. The Dharma, being the contents of enlightenment, in which there is no bondage and no suffering, offers freedom from the cankers of ignorance and fear. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Sangha is the holy order of spiritual ancestors, monks, priests, and all those who follow and practice this path. Homage to the Sangha. Homage to all who are approaching this holy path. Homage to all who follow and establish this holy path. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. By compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, by compassionate aspiration that harms no one, by compassionate speech that makes for clarity, by compassionate self-discipline that brings no regret, by compassionate livelihood that brings no discredit, by compassionate endeavor that results in goodness, by compassionate mindfulness that proves this path, by compassionate awareness that leads to nirvana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these three pure precepts. the precept of restraint and religious observances, the precept of obedience to all good laws, the precept to benefit all sentient beings. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. With this recitation, I do confirm my acceptance of these 10 grave prohibitive precepts, not to lead a harmful life, nor to encourage others to do so, not to take that which is not given, not to commit or participate in unchaste conduct, not to tell lies nor practice believing the fantasies of authority, not to use intoxicating drinks or narcotics, nor assist others to do so, not to publish other people's faults, not to extol oneself and slander others, not to be avaricious in bestowal of the teachings, not to be angry, not to speak ill of this religion or any other. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. In the practice of loving kindness, in the practice of pure attention, in the practice of ever-expanding faith, in the practice of constant devotion, and in the practice of inquiry through correct dhyana. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. O happy blessed day, O happy blessed place, O happy blessed time, O happy blessed path, O happy blessed opportunity. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself. Here in humble submission, in order to experience this most perfect now, I deeply vow and sacrifice all thoughts, all tensions, all pressures, and desires. I am born of karma. I am heir to karma. I abide in karma, and I am supported by karma. Whatever I do creates karma, and I shall surely experience this karma. The merit for all good acts I do freely offer to all beings. Dutyampi tatyampi savaha. Again and yet again may it be so. Willingness is the name of the key to the gate of awakening. For even to awaken from deep sleep and face the new day, there must be the willingness to do it. Here in my hand is the opportunity, and the way is clear beyond the gate of thought and desire. There is no self and other, as the awareness of pure, undisturbed consciousness slips into all consciousness. here to end suffering. If ending suffering is more important than anything, we will end suffering. If ending suffering is not more important than anything, we will not end suffering. If I am suffering, it is because I am choosing something over ending suffering. We are not here to create and cling to beliefs. We are here to pay attention. We are here to use everything in our experience to see how we cause ourselves to suffer, so we can drop that and end suffering.
There's a few things going on, but one thing that happened yesterday was I was being, there was a work period, and there was, I was being instructed in how to do some things that I didn't have any knowledge of how to do. Mm-hmm. And I just, I was just surprised to watch all this emotion rise up. And I realized that what was happening is there was someone present who had never really had much of an experience of being shown how to do things in a kind and patient way. And she was projecting that with what was going on, that, you know, this was being demonstrated very patiently and kindly. And it was great. It was just like I could see the possibility for a way to be with her that I often overlook. You know, it's like the experience is usually, you know, you should know, already know, mm-hmm. whatever is.
Yeah. Like, hurry up already.
Hurry up already. You should already know this. Mm-hmm. And
so I'm guessing from that, so you didn't have, when you were growing up maybe, someone who could mentor you in that kind of patient way. And so would you say that you kind of internalized that way of handling yourself?
Yeah, exactly. That was what was, you know, coming up. But that mm-hmm. wasn't this kid's experience growing up. And she, I actually grew up in a family with a dad that was very mechanically minded and did fix a lot of things, but it was focused on, learning those things kind of focused on the boys, because that's what boys do.
Right.
And she wanted to know that.
So you want to know how to fix things and how things work and
right. Mm-hmm. She's always this curious about everything, you know, wanting to learn everything.
Yeah, because that's not male or female, that's just human.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. And that there was always this, well, I got assigned to this girl thing and, you know, so this is not
or stick it out.
I just gotta stick it out. I could make cinnamon rolls, but I can't do anything with a carburetor, you know.
Yeah. It's not really isn't kind, is it?
No.
The way that we inherit, kind of what we inherit.
No. And Yeah, I just saw the possibility for, you know, kindness for this person, but how that also just, like, reaches out kindness to everyone, to be able to mentor myself in that way.
But that's still possible for you. Well, you might even say that's still possible for her, even though a lot of years have passed since, you know, the kind of that opportunity was missed with her.
Yeah.
From your dad or whatever. It's not too late for her. She could still really use that kind and patient mentoring.
Yes. Yeah, just seeing that. And it kind of all ties into the fact that I shared, my mom passed away 2 weeks ago, and near the end of her life, it was pretty painful, and I could see that, I could see how this kid was constantly trying to get something from this person who did not have it to give.
Who did not have it to give?
She just did not have it, you know, and I could just see how many years this kid spent, thinking it was her fault.
Yeah. God, it's funny you should say that, you know, what was coming up right before you said it is, you know, truly nobody's fault.
Yeah.
This is not her fault. You know, if you hadn't had the opportunity to do a practice that would assist you in waking up and in suffering, then that would just get passed on to the next generation and then to the next generation, or just to the people around us. It does anyway, you know, as we practice, but just how we're all just caught in this thing that really has none of us are at fault for, but it's just really hurtful and needs consciousness brought to it so that we can end that hurtfulness.
Boy. And I with the practice and being able to just step back a little bit in this whole process of what was going on around her death, and realizing that, I was the only person that could ever give to myself that which I needed to give, and watching, and of course it's all perception, but watching the whole family dynamics around it, and how just how it just reaffirmed that, boy, at the end of my life, I certainly do not, it would be a gift. I could just see what a gift it is to not be there with all of your conditioning and all of your unfinished business. And
especially at a time like that.
Especially at a time like that.
And kindness is needed no matter what, because there's so many raw feelings and, so many, probably so many little people in the room.
Yeah.
A lot of kindness is needed. And then, boy, for conditioning to be in the room also, taking advantage of that opening.
Yeah.
So you were saying you could really see what a kindness it would be.
Yes.
To give that to be able in yourself to give that gift.
To be able to give that gift, to be at center, and to not bring those those new little folks and
It really is a blessing, isn't it, that it's all in here. It's like one of the first pieces of information I think you come across in practice. It seems like that's what I remember. I remember, trying to grok that at the beginning. Still trying to grok it in a lot of ways. So really, I can truly take care of this being. There's actually a way to do that. And we really wouldn't want it any other way. I mean, conditioning does. Conditioning wants us to be able to take care of ourselves from the outside in all kinds of ways, but I don't think the heart would really want it any other way.
Yeah, it seems that way. And this person's still trying to grok it too. I just remember so many years people would say, you're not going to get what you want until, it's in here. It's in here. And I'm like, what in the heck are they talking about? In fact, it made me angry sometimes, it's like, I don't understand that, then to really finally come to that place of beginning to really understand what that might mean, mm-hmm. and how beautiful that is, mm-hmm. and just feeling a lot of gratitude for the practice for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my experience too. Being able to, especially a time like that, which is, I don't know what's going on here about that, but probably there's a lot happening inside about yeah. that, and a lot of emotion, and a lot of little people, and to be able to be that which can take care for that whole, as you go through this, and as all these people inside of you go through this, it's a really beautiful thing.
I had this wonderful experience this morning in my RLD call. and it also relates to little people inside us. So I was talking about, I was talking about a lot of things, but I was talking about particularly an artist part of myself that has been on my sort of agenda to allow to come forward all year.
Mm-hmm.
And
kind of a project. Mm-hmm.
And finally got a chance and what a good time she had.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was at Santa Sabina, I had a dialogue with that one. And that one said to the facilitator, Penny's become way too serious. And she really needs me. And she needs all of us expressive little people. Mm-hmm.
So just to be clear, don't forget we're going to do it for anybody who might be listening in. So this dialogue happened on recording, I imagine, because that's a big part of our practice right now. And so the dialogue is between that part of you, that kind of the hardest part, and facilitator in you. Yeah. They're both happening, in one body. And Penny is in there, too. So whoever that might be.
Right. So it just felt right on when that came up. And she said... Penny needs to call upon somebody who's loose and fun and silly. Mm. A lot.
A lot.
And I played that back, and I really enjoyed that. And what I saw in the course of my call this morning was, I was looking at that too serious thing, and I thought, we sometimes talk about, being depressed and then having sort of going along with a sort of low-grade depression.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was looking at was that when I know I'm really in condition, I become very grim, jaw tightening grim.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I think, for me, to some extent, being serious is sort of my low-grade grim.
Mm. It's does it feel like sort of like a default place to fall back to in conditioning? It's not like, big drama or big hurt or anything like that. It's just kind of a maintenance program.
Well, and it's I think it's a learned program about what it means to be a good person, a responsible mm-hmm. person. So it was fun because I thought, gosh, what if I were to come at everything in terms of it's been fun?
Yeah.
And then I said, what if I approach practice as play, as a fun play? Mm-hmm. And you should have recognized me. Oh my God, you can't do that.
Way too serious.
You can't do that because you'll be in trouble all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get notes all the time. You'll just be acting out all over the place. And you can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I was onto something,
mm-hmm.
and I just had this this recollection. I think I mentioned this incident before, but of when I was in kindergarten, apparently my mother told me this story. She went into the first teacher conference to hear about how her wonderful daughter was, and the teacher said, "She's awful. She is a leader, and she's just taking over the class, and she has kids rolling on the floor and running around the room, and I can't control the class." So apparently, they took me aside, my parents, and had a talk with me about that. And I remember my mother saying, "And you were very serious as you listened." So the next time she went in for a teacher conference, the teacher said, "Oh, this is astounding." She said, "She has kids washing the blackboards, sweeping the floor. She's managing all of that way, specifically."
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that I learned a lesson in there about what to do with energy.
That's you said what to do with energy.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's an interesting way of talking about it.
What I'm supposed to do with my energy.
So the energy is not supposed to be rolling around on the floor and playful, and it's supposed to be really serious according to the rules and according to what people expect.
Yep.
And grim.
And then the form it takes is you know, when I only got into conditioning was grim. And I think that what arose, I'm guessing, was that just, was really just what conditioning did, a fear of that. And so when I said that, I found myself saying on the call this morning was, I feel like I have an opportunity to learn to trust play again. Mm-hmm. And that just feels like so much fun. Mm-hmm. I can hardly wait.
Yeah, and I bet you that's true too. You know, looking at it, I would bet you that there's really no chance of kind of being inappropriate in that, because it's not what you're not talking about is just abandoning your life to this little part of you to just do whatever she wants. Because that's not going to work, and that's not even really possible. Because we've got her. It's interesting, I think. We've got her. We've got the, you know, sort of a mentoring presence talking to her, but they're talking about Penny.
Yeah.
And so it's just so interesting. So it's kind of like Penny can make these choices. You know, because Penny, I'm guessing, Penny is kind of, you know, one way of talking about sort of the result of that training process. You know, if it's up to the little person, everybody will be rolling on the floor and getting lots of notes. If it's up to Penny, none of that will be happening, but there's no happiness. But yet there's this other presence that can kind of hold that whole thing there. And I would bet you that presence, who can allow that to happen, understand what's appropriate, and kind of has a big picture and can make it so it's safe for everybody.
Totally, yeah. I mean, I got that. What's going on really is that is for that. I think that Penny of it is fear, mm-hmm. and the mentor isn't afraid at all. In fact, as I was sitting this morning, I just started checked in with the mentor, and the mentor was just saying, "Yippee!
This is going to be good."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. It was a wonderful, and you know, I really got that I wouldn't have gotten there if I hadn't done the best unit process, if I hadn't done the recording process, if I hadn't been on that RLD call. And I really got how practice really does allow us to come back to who we are.
Yeah, it really supports and fosters that.
It really does.
Yeah, it's amazing. Thank you. Kim.
Yeah, I've had a couple of things lately that have kind of helped shine light on the made-upness and the impermanence of all of the egocentric stuff that we tend to believe is really, really real about life, mm-hmm. like money and having any kind of control over anything. So I've been called upon to spend a lot of money on my automobile lately.
Why? So relate to that.
Oh, yeah. I've been really lucky with cars all my life, you know. I
wonder if it's cosmic. It's just this is the time where everything just breaks down, or maybe the mechanics needed the money, or...
Yeah, it kind of happens in
it does.
Clusters like that.
Yeah, because the monastery, I mean, we just got one after the other going in there.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have two cars. And, but this one, you know, so I've been really lucky. I go years with nothing, and so there's some kind of sort of expectation that's...
This is the way it is with automobiles.
Yeah.
You don't spend any money, they just go on forever.
Put gas on them, yeah, and you take them in once in a while and change the oil and mm-hmm. drive them, you know. So, I mean, we're talking thousands of dollars here. And somebody's like, this is really a problem. Now, this is taking, you know, too much money. And then there was this, like, I became aware of the fact that money isn't really even real. You know, yeah, like somebody in the bank didn't go to some little box that says Cameron Seller, pull out all these dollar bills and put it in the box and mail it to the auto shop. You know, it's like some numbers disappeared here, some numbers appeared over there, yeah. And then this person has some sort of experience that it's real.
What are you talking about when we go to Zambia? Because we'll go there and get a lot of money. In Zambia, it takes a lot of pieces of paper to create anything that will spend anything just because of the inflation of the year. So you get none of these big stacks of money. And you're walking around, this is really important. You don't want anybody to take them. And it's just, you know, you're protecting them and stuff. And then it's just always, you know, we always end up with some extra that we bring back. And then as soon as we leave in Dola, yeah. And get on the airplane, it's just like, man, I'm just throwing this. It's just completely, you know, we have no relationship with it anymore.
Yeah. So anyway, it was just really interesting to, I actually listened to a really fascinating and funny program that was talking about how money isn't real. And I just got to reflect on this whole thing of spending money. It was just like, sort of like, yeah, really.
But it's made real, isn't it?
It's made to be real. It's like an agreement that we we agree to have this imaginary stuff have a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's really important and we have to suffer over it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you could say, to some extent, I mean, it is kind of real in the sense that, you know, all those little numbers disappear from the bank or go down in the bank, and
yeah,
that has an impact. That can even impact a person so far as to be able to not fix a car, not have enough money to buy groceries. I mean, that has a really big impact.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like it's real on that level.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not necessarily real on the subtle level you're talking about, where all this, it means something in here that now I have to suffer over.
Yeah. And the other thing that happened that sort of reflected how impermanent and so forth are realities that we have. I was walking yesterday on this path that I walk on every single day for years and years and years, and suddenly I found myself slamming against the ground in a very hard and forceful way, and it was just like so shocking, because there was just like, this is just someplace I know, someplace I go, someplace I wouldn't even consider falling in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And there it was. Bam! You know, and I was like, what? It was just so shattering to somebody's reality, you know? And it was just very clear how, one, we don't have any control, and how, two, we make up that we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that I do. I put my feet down, I go from here to there, and nothing ever happens, nothing will. And so that sort of in the context of finding the whole thing about the money and this, it's just sort of got me in this place of like, you know, let's just kind of like what was just shared.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's just have fun.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that makes sense is to enjoy. You know, and I don't mean in some kind of in the previous share too, some sort of just let it all hang out and mm-hmm. just, you know, do inappropriate things. But mm-hmm. I mean, let loose of all this kind of desire or need or feeling that there's control and that everything means so much and that it's so important. It's
mm-hmm.
like, it's moment to moment and it can be different. It can change in a heartbeat, you know. And why not just enjoy every mm-hmm. little bit of it?
Yeah, and that kind of enjoyment doesn't take away like being responsible, let's say, financially, or it doesn't take away something like really paying attention when we're walking around. And that, as a matter of fact, it even sort of includes those.
Yeah.
It's like that bigger place of awareness we were just talking about. You know, when we're aware that, you know, anything can happen
mm-hmm.
at any moment, then there's a paying attention that's there that's not there otherwise. And it's almost like that paying attention is what creates a space where we can relax and have fun. It's, you know,
yeah.
It's like there's a big person here. So I know there's a big person here now. There wasn't before, so I can relax. I'm just kind of, it's kind of like a little kid. You know, I can explore what's here. You know, if I get over here too far, I get too close to the road or something, then somebody will help me understand it. You know, we've got to be over here to be safe.
Absolutely, and it's not a responsibility that comes out of fear.
Right.
Which is
mm-hmm.
where the tightness and mm-hmm. stuff can be, is that, you know, there's this awareness that something could happen and I need to be vigilant. It's not that at all.
Yeah, which, and that's not really taking responsibility
no.
at all, is it? That's
no.
just taking responsibility for conditioned mind.
That's right.
Making sure it's not disturbed and it can stay in charge.
Yeah.
So no wonder conditioning would, actually, you haven't mentioned it, conditioning freaking out, but in the previous year, it's the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the conditioning would freak out about something like that because it really is taking the control out of the hands of, you know, this thing that's following us around all the time, trying to control us,
mm-hmm.
and giving it over to just, you know, awareness and kind of compassion inside of that
mm-hmm.
awareness also, and then all the possibility that arises inside of that, you know, just relax or enjoy,
mm-hmm.
and just kind of be present to our lives.
Yeah, and it goes back for me to just an ongoing theme and practice that I keep being reminded of, is trusting life.
Mm-hmm.
And trusting myself to be okay, just to be in the flow of life.
Mm-hmm.
That life is where the wisdom and everything is that is required, I guess I would say, to live a healthy, happy, well-being life.
Yeah, it's so true. And the way I've been getting that for myself lately is, I am adequate to any amount of pain.
Mm-hmm.
any amount of pain. And so knowing that, you know, there's no reason to hold on to anything, really. Just trusting that, you know, life is going to take me wherever it takes me. And probably a lot of it's going to be challenging, like the thing with the cars, or it's going to be painful, like, you know, the emotional stuff that happens. But I'm going to be adequate to that. So why not just trust life, trust where it goes, knowing that, you know, it's just our vast experience, that it always takes us exactly where we need.
Mm-hmm. And knowing that if I don't trust and try to make things happen, that's just the cause of suffering anyway, so why not? Take the risk.
Yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer at that point.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Cameron. Amy.
I'm not really sure what to share. I'm finding sharing in group always challenging.
Mm-hmm. So you're finding, you're not sure what to say, you're finding sharing group challenging right now, and are challenging that this morning by sharing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not being so serious, something along those lines. I've been looking at that a bit, and someone takes everything very seriously. Even sharing a group.
I was wondering, I'm wondering if that's an element of it. So by taking it seriously, what do you mean exactly?
The potential outcome could be
the meditation hall could explode. You could be ostracized, something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there's fear there.
Which makes it really serious and also makes it really, really challenging to participate.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that in a lot of, in any sort of decision making, and sharing a group is fun with this decision making, decide what's going to come out right now. But any decision making, and
now, of course, you don't actually have to decide what's going to come out of your mouth, right? You ever notice that? Probably having that experience right now. You can just open your mouth and something will happen. And usually, that when we do it that way, you know, it's light. It's what kind of what people were talking about before, because that's what conditioning is trying to do. If conditioning can make it a decision, oh boy, then it's really got us. Because then it's something we can fail at. It's something we can be judged for. But if we're just spontaneous, if we're just acting spontaneously from what's not that you could say from what's here, or just from who's here, or just from, you know, whatever's happening in this moment, it's like it doesn't really have anything to hold on to cause us to suffer with.
I was looking at this recently with something that I made a choice about, and then was up at 4 in the morning obsessing over, and got out the recorder and started talking about it. And I said, I think I got duped over this really insignificant thing. And I started just lashing, like, just like, crack up as I said it. I think I got duped over blah, blah, blah. And then there was this pause, and then someone else said, only it isn't funny. And then it just became very serious again. It was like a moment there was just like just a joke. And
there was a letting go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then it was like, but this is serious. Mm-hmm. And that's...
I don't know, tell me this is in the ballpark of what you're looking at, but I mean, it really takes me back to what we were talking about before with the little people, because probably for a part of you, whatever it is, no matter how tiny, it really is serious. Right? It really is important, or we could say. I don't know if it's that kind of thing, or if it's just a pure conditioning and self-hate trying to take away a bit of time. Right? I can imagine how, a little person might want all kinds of things, and that's, seems like a really big deal. And without some conscious compassion and awareness to be with that person, as we were talking about before, then it just remains serious. It all remains kind of life and death. Mm-hmm. But with the conscious compassion and awareness, then there's a space for that person to experience whatever he or she is experiencing about that. Or it kind of lightens the whole thing up, and it makes it kind instead of just so life and death and so kind of heading towards a beating and judgment and stuff. Can I ask you more thing about that? Just so, what was going on, do you feel like, with that voice that came in to take away the laughter?
Wants to do the right thing, it seems like there's also like wants to be held to a high standard. And I think there are a couple ways of putting it, that one is just trying to measure up to an impossible standard that's conditioning and never going to happen, but then there's also just a wanting to live up to
something, would you say, maybe kind of your heart sees? Mm-hmm. A possibility that there's more from here than a standard that conditioning is making up?
Yeah. And then I think that quickly gets taken over.
Yeah, I bet.
That quickly becomes something that falls into that serious.
Yeah.
tactics.
Yeah, it quickly becomes its opposite, almost.
Yeah.
Instead of something that I would project as dynamic and energy-producing and maybe fun, life-affirming, mm-hmm. into something really grim and serious, and yeah. judgment and hate-producing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did it feel like when you laughed that you kind of went from the one to the other a little bit?
Yeah, because it didn't feel like a laughter, as in it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. There was more just like...
Look at this. Look at this light we're in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
Not serious in the way that it is from inside it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still serious in the sense that there's life force going into this. There's hurt happening mm-hmm. as a result of this. Is that kind of what you mean? It's serious on that level.
Yeah.
But it's not serious on the level of that thing really is something to suffer over.
Yeah.
And you have to do that. You have all these impossible standards to meet. It's not that kind of serious. Mm-hmm. It's more that impeccable possibility kind of serious. Like, wow, this is... We're alive here, and it's possible that we could, the word that comes up is achieve, but that starts to slide into that other side, but there's something that's possible here, and sounds like, you know, you really want that. Thank you. Thank you.
A couple things in that conversation and the one that we started out with this morning that were... made me just see something a little bit differently. I was listening this morning to one of the recordings I made at Santa Sabina, and it was I think it had been part of a conversation, but where a little one was allowed to speak, and she was talking about being afraid and how things scared her, and as it went on. What she ended up saying was, I just want to know that I haven't been bad.
Mm-hmm. Want to know that I haven't been bad?
Yeah, because what she was expressing was that she was getting all this information about things that were wrong and bad, and that she somehow was getting the information that was her fault. Mm-hmm. And she said, that's what I just need to know that I haven't been bad.
Mm-hmm.
And it was around the time, there was around the place in the retreat where we were asked a question about what is it we hide?
Mm-hmm.
And the two kinds of things that came out for me in that question were, one, that I hide my heart, you know, who I really am. And the other was, I try to hide all the things I've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it occurred to me, for that little kid, those were the same thing.
Same thing, yeah.
The same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't really seen how closely those were connected for her, because she was just doing who she was and somehow got information that she was wrong.
Yeah.
And so, to her, they're the same things.
Don't you think that happened to all of us, don't you think?
Yeah,
and we learn to equate
you know,
natural expression of this person with bad. And so we have learned how to not be bad by not being who we are. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're in this predicament.
Yeah. Yeah. So she learned to be just really careful. You know, really careful. To do the best she could not to upset the mm-hmm. apple cart in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps this is your version of Grimm.
Yeah, really. It is my version of Grimm. And I can see it often, working meditations referred to earlier, and on Friday morning, I was in the kitchen doing working meditation, and generally speaking, it's funny because it's a place where, in some ways, I feel at home, because in much of my life, I do most of the cooking, so I kind of know what I'm doing in that realm.
Used to that. Mm-hmm.
Used to that. But when I'm cooking, in someone else's kitchen with someone else's recipes for someone else's meal, this whole thing comes up about having to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and on Friday, much of the time when I've been asked to do that as my working meditation, it's been pretty manageable. And on Friday, it was a little bit on the edge of manageable. And somebody just kind of looked at all that was going to be asked of her and just started out by, you know, I can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do this. It's way too big. It's way too big for me and for her, if it was,
mm-hmm.
you know, for that little kid, you know, and I just, you know, just this quiet voice has been coming in lately and just says, you know, well, but we're an adult.
Mm-hmm.
We can, you know.
Not too big for me.
It's not too big for me, you know.
Even if it doesn't all get done, it's not too big for me.
Yeah, well, someone asked me that question. Even if it doesn't all get done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about that.
Good to have a big person on our team, isn't it?
It is. It's really good that she's been showing up a lot lately. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the recording process is so helpful.
That's what I was wondering, you know, because that, you know, it was a thing that happened in the retreat where somebody was talking about when we're listening, mm-hmm. we're often, you know, kind of a little person. When we're recording, we're often kind of a big person. And so it seems like naturally as we're recording and listening, we're sort of practicing kind of both those places, but particularly, you know, the one that's more challenging and less habitual for us is the big person place. So that I was speculating as you were saying that having that big person around one of these days is a direct result from doing that practice.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely is a direct result from doing that practice. I mean, it's, it was harder to find that big person before we did this practice. Now it's actually very easy to find
mm-hmm.
that person.
Because mm-hmm. you've been practicing it.
And last night I had a, this is just a little aside, but last night I had a whole nother expected benefit from the mentor. And I was doing a little recording before, in the evening before bed, which I am in the practice of doing. And lately I've been asking the mentor to be there with me during the night because I often have kind of disturbing dreams. And that's when I usually ask the mentor to be with me there in the night. If I have them, I'm not aware of them. At least I don't wake up with the memory of them. So I found myself last night as I was expressing that, saying something like, you know, am I going to go to bed and invite the mentor to be there with me through a night of peaceful and uninterrupted sleep? Something along those lines. I hadn't meant to say something like uninterrupted, because I'm a person who at least once a night or more times have to get up and use the facilities. And last night, I went to sleep, and I never woke up until it was time to get up.
Yeah, if you could bottom that.
I'm going to see what happens when I say that again. Setting an intention, even when you're not consciously setting one, can be really powerful.
Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to try that. Let's see. I think I saw Alex next.
This is really neat because it feels like something that I've been looking at. I'll just say what I think we're talking about. what's up for me is that something about the reality that I live in is completely made up, or that there's even an I living in a reality that...
That's made up too.
That's made up too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where to begin? But I had a guidance appointment in the Santa Sabina that I have included with the recordings I listen to every day, so I must have heard at least, seven times, at least seven, because it just keeps, everything just shuffles and it does its own thing. And I was interested in the point that I brought up with about, so if everything's made up, and I could, with that information, one could do anything. You know, so if one is not listening to the voices of conditioning, if one isn't engaging with them at all, could do whatever. You know, because what I find myself in is sometimes is that I started to talk about the duality that comes up around that. Conditioning gets a hold of it. Mm-hmm. And says, you should be able to do anything as a result of this. And the other side of it is, well, if you could do anything, why bother doing anything? You know, just...
Yeah, so what I hear you saying is, so without listening to the voices, everything's just open space.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's no limitations, there's kind of nothing there.
If it occurred to me to do a jumping jack all of a sudden...
You could.
I could, yeah. Mm-hmm. It'd be the same thing as going over to the food and eating it, except there's certain things that are very, very laid out about what... Because they just carry so much baggage with them, you know, so going off to work or paying bills or doing taxes is not the same thing as going, you know, on a walk, you know, with the dog or, I don't know, eating chocolate cake.
So there's that kind of that, a whole empty, it's the space is empty. If
yes.
It sounds like you're just here and not listening to the voices. If you start listening to the voices or kind of believing the stuff that's behind the voices, mm-hmm. then there's kind of things that get put in that space,
that's
that
right.
limit. Like that duality is perfect because now the whole world of possibilities has gone down to those two.
Right. And, mm-hmm. and they feel rock solid. And they end up taking something that is really an interesting insight that everything's possible, and then mm-hmm. conditioning just folds that right back in again mm-hmm. to...
And we can work with that.
Here's a bunch of standards to live by, or why bother doing it? And it's just constantly manipulating what it is. That I, and so part of what I've been working with in that, because I see how strong that is sometimes, like how much, and I see all the parts that are coming up as a result of that. Like it tries to focus in on particular aspects to get them to do what it says is important. You know, like there's an aspect of myself that I've seen who just loves to have every little detail cleaned up. Like the inbox with nothing in it is golden. One, even one, is not okay. And it starts to look at what I do and starts to say, well, you need to be consistent. And starts looking at all the ways in which there's inconsistency and has trouble with it. And my practice with the recording is that the mentor comes in and says, I see that's an issue. And there are two ways, there's two ways to deal with it. One is drop the voice. You know, you're perfect exactly as you are. And if there's something that you want to accomplish, I'm going to help you with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got this kind of way of working with it that feels like what was started with. Because no one ever actually worked with me on anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just this assumption that, you know, I'm here in life and there are these made-up rules that I'm all of a sudden following. And I either have to follow them or figure it out on my own. There's no one actually there who's an adult
mm-hmm.
to say, you know what? Who you are is perfect. I love you exactly as you are. Wouldn't change a thing.
And
what do you want to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you want to be? What do you want to be when you grow up?
Mm-hmm.
I'll help you. Mm-hmm. You know, here are the books you're going to need to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And
just really takes care of the whole thing, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Just has complete faith in my adequacy and that I can do whatever it is. And not holding me to, because the conditioning has this particular feel to it, you know, where it's just like, it's like says things like, from now on, you know, and it's just very rocks, like, it's very narrow. I can always tell when I'm caught up in something because there's like a particular part that's getting focused in on something. Like, it's just using this thing to drive itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just having a really good time with it at the moment.
Mm-hmm. A lot of space, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of room to just not be trapped by those things, and just mm-hmm. be you and explore and really, and also really take care of yourself.
Yeah, and as you said that, something else that come up was that it allows me to, space, but to challenge the voices that come up and say things like that, to see how it puts limits on things, such as kindness,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there's this part of the mystery tape that's that I've recently heard. It's a part of the digital library that's available. And advertising. It's shameless, I know. It's available if you keep it simple. And it goes on to this part about that this mystery is available to me, and even if someone is trying to stop me from experiencing the mystery, I can be living in that mystery even though that is happening. Mm-hmm. So it feels like it calls upon me to challenge what is limiting me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like that's where we live, is in that mystery. Mm-hmm. It really can't be taken away from us unless we let it. That's what listening to the voices is all about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so my job is to continue to keep redirecting my attention to that mystery.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Sequoia.
I just want to share briefly a recording success. I think I heard it early on about just the recorder, listening to it a lot, and just training ourselves to constantly look to the mentor. And yesterday I was having some battery issues, and I didn't have the recorder in as often as I usually do. And I had this great experience of just turning toward the mentor during the day in a way that I haven't consistently done before. And I was engaged in a moving task for a good portion of the day, and there was the mentor, and she was saying, helium balloon head, you know, shoulders relaxed, you know, and it was awesome.
That is awesome.
And she was there saying, that's right, you got it, that's it, that's how to do it. And, you know, my general posture in doing anything is like, well, let's get this done as quick as possible, and that means my shoulders up here and just...
Bowling ball head. Yeah,
bowling ball head. we'll relax later. You know? And so that was really very cool. And also, just having someone mention mentor in sleep, and I had that experience the first time this week too. I have made a commitment to record every day, because it has become just the best. And so I have been recording in the evenings, and I had the mentor say, I will be with you even in your sleep. Mm-hmm. And, I will be very close, and we're going to make a magic wall around conditioning, and we're, it was just this great night. And prior to that, it never even occurred to me that it's possible to keep that closeness with mentor even during the night.
Especially with practice, with that recording, is to kind of being there all the time. Somebody mentioned this actually in one of our last groups, that it becomes as if it's, even when we're not actually listening to the recording, it, because we're doing it so much, it just keeps on going. Mm-hmm. And I could really imagine that happening during sleep.
Yeah, so that's my recording success. It's great.
Mm-hmm. Brian.
We were talking earlier about seriousness, and that brought up for me just this little quote, and I have no idea where it comes from, or even when I first heard it, which is, that life is too important to take seriously, which for me is just kind of right where I am with things. It is. We only get kind of this moment, if we're being really serious about it, then we miss an opportunity to experience it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, we're really serious about it. I mean, that can only be what I got is that only can be with a conditioned mind. So we actually leave what it is that's here in order to be serious about it.
And, I wanted to share a little experience I had last night, which I thought was pretty funny. In that I got to see kind of clearly some stuff that was going on. So I went back to the Hermitage, and I was like, okay, got a plan in a minute. we record, and we sit, and we go to bed. And then, you know, kind of something was like, oh, well, why don't you just go to, you know, lay on the bed?
Who said that?
Stretch your legs out, which is really funny, because it's a weird little term, because, you know, I sleep in a kind of a stretched out position, and I wake up and my legs are stiff, so that doesn't appear to have any relationship to stretching. And so I'm sitting there and I was recording, and then I could just kind of feel it already starting to come in. So all my recorder is just, I'm getting a lot of information that I'm too tired to go sit and I should just go to bed. And
getting a lot of information.
Yeah, so that's my
story. Information.
Yeah, and so, and it's just sitting there talking to the recorder, just like, yeah, it's interesting because I know that's not going to happen. I'm going to go sit because I always go sit at night. So. And, you know, turn off the recording, I'm chilling there for a moment, all of this is coming in, you know, and I just kind of went inside, and it was just kind of, well, it was kind of fruitless, wasn't it?
Uh-huh.
But then I realized I'd kind of been set up, because I didn't want to have my kind of solar-powered light on, because I had no really idea how much charge that battery has, so, I'd like to have it available for the morning if I need to find something or whatnot. And so I went to look at my little lamp, and I was like, all right, lamp, we're going to get you going. And I looked at it, and I was like, wait a minute, I don't have any matches. Wait a minute, I knew I didn't have any matches. I had this experience last night. Right? So, and I had all the systems in place to track that and make sure that I get that taken care of. Something... This is a setup here. So,
yeah, when you have systems like that, it almost, when it's something like that doesn't happen, you have to figure, you know what, this kind of feels intentional.
Yeah, somebody, quote unquote, set this up. So I'm like, well, here we go. I'm going to turn off my light and I'm just kind of get ready and sit in the dark. And I got to watch. So there's this voice that I identified with for pretty much most of my life, which is just an outright paranoid, and especially if it's dark at night when everything's gotten really quiet and I'm far away from other people, it just starts spinning all of these insane, you know, ideas of what's going on in the world. You know, like CIA helicopters, just nutty. And so I'm sitting, and it starts trying to do that. And so...
Now, did it actually try for the CIA helicopter?
Not CIA helicopter this night. But, there are little noises going around, because there's always little noises going on. And, you know, they're getting kind of spun into different things. And I got to watch how fear is manufactured. So there's a noise outside of my door. And there's adrenaline. And then, which, you know, makes perfect sense. That's probably a very, very ancient instinct. Noise in the dark, get the body ready for whatever might happen. That's probably saved any number of my ancestors going back. That makes perfect sense. But then, you know, just this little microscopic slice of a second later, the story starts about what that is and what that means for me.
And that's a whole different...
And that's where a sensation in the body translates into a feeling of fear. And I had to watch it just over and over and over and over again. That's how, you know, I'm sitting there for half an hour, and there's a lot of little noises in that time. And just over and over and over again, just sitting there going, you know, if in the strange chance that, you know, some ravenous bear somehow figures out how to turn the doorknob and pull that hole instead of smashing against it. You know, is there anywhere else I want to be when that happens? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm on my cushion, I'm centered. This is
the place to get eaten, isn't it?
The best place to get eaten, as far as that is. So why do I need to spend my time having this experience of being afraid and having all of these, you know, images and stories and narratives of my very recent
completely useless.
Yeah, it's just, there's no point. It's just my body is doing what bodies do because of millions of years of evolution to be ready for stuff in the night. And I don't have to spin, you know, create this entire superstructure over that mm-hmm. and then convince myself that that's what's really happening. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of actually when I was a music student, the first time I had to get on a stage in front of people and perform a piece of music, I was petrified. It was my first solo, and I played it, I think I counted up over 3,000 times in the like 2 months leading up to having to, and it's a thing where I'm not consciously aware of anything about that piece, but if I'm holding a guitar and just kind of let my mind go off somewhere, I'll play it and not even realize it. Mm-hmm. I get halfway in, I go, oh, I'm playing that piece, and then I can't play it anymore. It's entirely just incorporated mm-hmm. in my body. But I was still just so petrified. One of the older music students kind of took me aside and said, look, what's going to happen, you're going to get out there, you're going to be petrified. Right? All this adrenaline is going to be rushing through your body, but what that's going to do is give you space. So even if you make a mistake, you can recover from it so fast that nobody will know it happened. And I was like, that's a different way to look at that experience. And sure enough, I mean, if I had to explain what was going on with me out there, I was playing that 3-minute piece for half an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, there's just so much space. I could just sit there and plan out every single little motion and everything. You know, I got plenty of applause, so apparently it was at least passable for a beginning guitar student. But just having that different experience with what the sensations in my body mean just really kind of opens it up to see that, you know, there's a lot that goes into manufacturing some kind of emotional experience out of a physical experience.
Yeah, just out of almost nothing. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Okay, that's our time.